This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. I hope you guys had the happiest of holidays and happy new year. We were taking a break for the holidays, but we're back, baby. Yes, we are. And the Pacers are playing tonight. Go Pacers. But I just want to go straight into it after saying thank you guys so much for being with us for how many years have we been doing this? 6 years now? Well, we started in 2020.
Yeah, this would be the sixth year.
Sixth year, but not a sixth, like five and a half at this point.
I don't know. We started out having like seasons. Technically, per my records, we're in season 8. But how I started sectioning those off makes no sense.
Yeah, we kind of pivoted to what I found interesting. I'm a wild card.
Yeah, you know. But this is the sixth year we've been doing this as far as...
Seven Deadly Sinners.
Well, you know, I don't think it's been 6 years since we started, but now we started in 2020 and this is 2026.
All right. I love it. And
according to the Gregorian calendar, we're in our sixth year.
Well,
maybe not sixth fiscal year.
Fair enough. But I feel like all other podcasts, they celebrate their, like, you know, monuments or whatever. I was listening to My Favorite Murder, and I think they're on their, yeah, they're having their 10-year anniversary, or they just had it. And though it's not with Seven Deadly Sinners, I have been podcasting.
We have been podcasting.
Oh, yeah. We have been together between Be Here for a While, Deadly Diocese, Seven Deadly Sinners. But Be Here for a While started in 2015 or 2016. I can't remember.
2015.
So I hit 10 years on that.
Well.
Except for I stopped for 3 years. So.
We started in like August of 2016, me and you.
Okay. So I had started before that. But regardless, doesn't matter. I don't think that everyone needs to know like our calendar and accounting of dates. But... I think
we've been doing this a long time. It actually has been kind of tough not podcasting, and this feels good. This feels,
yeah,
this,
it does,
just,
it
this
feels
little
good
bit
to
of
talk
normalcy.
Right now. Yeah, it really, like, their breaks are good at certain points, but like I miss talking to you guys, and it's been a part of like doing a podcast for over 10 years, and I mean you've been with me and done it with me. For over 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that is a lot of content to put out, but that's also something that like is in your bones at a certain point.
This feels nice.
Yeah. That's why when I'm a cashier at Ringo's, I can't not be my main character energy. I'm just like, hey, do you want to hear about the things? I have a very successful podcast. Do you know about the history of this place? Oh, the things I say to people that they are not asking for is...
You're always in podcast mode.
Yeah, it's just, I'm always on.
Now you have a carousel of people every few minutes coming in to find out about the podcast, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, but oftentimes it's the same people over and over again. And then
they're getting bombarded.
Yeah, and then I develop a new relationship with them where we have like a weird rapport.
What you're saying is our listenership should be going up in Aguilar, Colorado as we speak.
whatever. I'm hitting the streets. This is called like a boots on the ground movement. But no, you guys have been with us for forever and we're still doing awesome. I'm just exploring other things, exploring my space.
Yeah. You know, the first time we've been able to do that in quite a long time.
Yeah. But let's get into the story. And not just because we're talking about Colorado. I know I do a lot of stories in Colorado, but when the weather starts to change here, you can't help but think about what could happen. So we've only recently had our second snow this year. And frankly, I would say, if you could probably agree with this, it's been mild so far, but when the weather flares, you kind of sense it. Like, I feel like it's coming. Like, I feel like something's
winter
about to hit.
Winter is coming.
Oh, there we go. Is that from Game of Thrones?
Yes, Game of Thrones. But yeah, I mean, you can see it in the sky. You can feel it in the air when a storm is brewing.
Yeah, like it's like oh, well, we had like in December, we definitely didn't have a white Christmas. It was like 60 degrees. You know, it's been unseasonably warm. But then we had our first snow, and I just feel like you just get this weird feeling. And the thing with Colorado weather and anything really on the Front Range and any place, well, I mean the South with hurricanes and just any place where you know, or in the Midwest with tornadoes, any place where you know shit could change quickly, you kind of just start to feel it in your bones. And the weather in these places can be very, very unforgiving. So needless to say, it's been on my mind. So now today, we're going to be talking about one of the worst floods in Colorado history, the Pueblo Flood of 1921. A disaster born from weather, neglect, corruption, and a city that thought it had time, but it didn't. And that happens to us all the time, even here, because we're still building our house. The pipe, like, did we have the heaters on? Like, so the pipes don't freeze, you know, because we're not like living up here totally yet. We're recording up here, but you know, sometimes you're
always scrambling to prepare for the weather.
Yeah, exactly.
You never have enough time. And any time you think you have enough time, if you ever test Mother Nature, if you say this can wait till tomorrow, you're gonna get hit two times as hard. If you're going to leave something outside that can't get wet, it will rain.
It will rain. Yep. If you, let's say you need propane for some sort of heater, because a lot of people out here, you know, kind of live off grid, which I mean, we do sort of as well, but if you need,
we might as well be off grid. We have power from the power company, but we're in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. It's hard. And then it's hard when you can't get to an amenity. Like the local grocery store that I work at, no brag, I'm the mayor of Aguilar now.
Hostile takeover of the town.
They don't know what hit them. All right.
She's a secret agent.
They just don't even know. I infiltrated it so quickly.
This is going to be Seven Deadly Sinners Village.
Yeah.
By the time she's done.
I might be one of the subjects of what I covered in season one and two.
Has a podcast ever had its own town?
They don't know. Listen, I'm torturing people left and right, including you guys. But what I was going to say was, yeah, in this small town, there's the, like in the winter, the place I work at closes at 6:30 p.m. So let's say you need a propane exchange. Let's say the weather changes. You ain't getting it.
You better already have had propane on deck.
And that's what people do. That's what I've noticed from the like 10 days I've worked there is like people start preparing like for like Austin, for example, came in and he stocked up on booze, frankly, because he knew he would be
snowed in
for, you know, a while. And he went to Walsenburg and stopped. I'm just giving too much information. What I'm trying to say is the Front Range can be unforgiving. So I digress. So before the flood, Pueblo was a boomtown with a split personality. On paper, it was progress. Steel mills, railroads, meatpacking plants, smelters. It was actually even called the Pittsburgh of the West.
Yeah, I mean, the big steel plant is still there.
Yeah.
You see it, you know, impossible to drive I-25 in Southern Colorado and not notice the enormous steel plant in Pueblo.
Is that one still in operation, or is that the...
It was. There was that huge fire. So a Russian company, Evraz, bought the American steel plant here in Pueblo, but they've already sold it. It's no longer owned by... It could have been a whole insurance scam. This is a whole other thing to research, but it was operational. To remember, there was that huge fire.
The one you drove by fairly recently?
No.
Oh, okay.
This was like in the summer.
Oh, okay. I don't.
Anyhow, big fire. Then the company, Russian company, sold the steel plant. I don't know if anyone owns it now. Well, I guess they sold it. I don't know what's going on up there, but it was operational this year in 2025.
Mm-hmm.
So they were making railroad tracks. That's what they were.
Interesting. Yeah. I wonder if it's the building I'm thinking of. Like when you drive into Pueblo, you see like a mill, but then there's also like.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
A really cool building that, you know, if you've ever been to New York or you're from New York, you know, they have like let's say Chelsea Market. Kind of looks like it was like in an old factory type deal. And every time I drive by it, I'm like, I'm going to buy that one day. See, I have main character energy, like I said, and I have to really reel myself back in because I'm like, I see an opportunity there. Let's see what we can make with this. And I'll give my opinion to whoever owns it and insert myself. In fact, one last anecdote. The lady that trained me at my new cashier job, we like became friends, and she invited me over for a drink after work. And then she was explaining that one of her cousins was this like really famous sculptor from New Mexico that gets flown to Dubai to do sculptures. I was like, I mean, you know what? I think a sculpture would be fantastic at my new place. And then I started laughing to myself and I was like, oh, you think you can afford like with probably $500,000 sculpture?
He's getting flown to Dubai.
Yeah. And I was like, give me his business card.
Yeah.
We got to talk. Yeah.
Because we just need a sculpture here in our home.
Yeah.
Custom.
Yeah. It's called...
Chiseled from marble.
Yeah. It's called Delusions of Grandeur. Okay, back to the story. So, Pueblo believed it understood the Arkansas River. Seasonal flooding was normal. Spring runoff was expected. Heavy rains came and went. Again, with the quick switch in weather. So the city did what many American cities did in the early 20th century. They built around the danger instead of respecting it. Low-lying neighborhoods sat right along the riverbanks. Bridges were old, levees were incomplete, and drainage was poor. And you can attest to the fact that drainage, this is the high desert around here, it's poor.
Yeah.
I mean, we have like 15... by 15 arroyos, like cuts in the... Granted, they were probably made well over time, like a long time, but huge. I mean, those aren't made from anything other than heavy rains and flooding.
And wind. But for them, I mean, yeah. The problem is when there isn't a lot of water that often. But
yeah,
when
because
there
so it's not
is,
ready for it. Yeah.
When there is, it doesn't know where to go.
Yeah.
And then so yes, it'll make deep channels.
It's kind of like even in LA, when it rains there, like it floods very quickly because it doesn't rain often. Same with Palm Springs, where we lived as well. Like it doesn't it's similar where it's just like if it comes down quickly
and the ground
is going to flood.
It's not very porous. So it's like the water flows on top and we're in the mountains, so it's at an angle. So it starts rushing fast and it's all on the surface and doesn't have anywhere to go.
Yeah. And that's what's scary about areas like, you know, high desert, like places that are not prepared for water. Like I grew up in a very rainy part of Oregon. And that ground was used to sopping up rain 300 days a year. It's not used to it here. So it's like a panic flood, flash flood is what one might call it. And I will say this, but we'll go in, maybe we'll go into it later because I've learned some safety tips about it, but go to high ground. Don't stay in a car. Anyways, so there was no unified flood control system at this time. Again, it's 1921. Sorry. I'm thinking about the Black Hand Syndicate document. So no upstream reservoirs to regulate the flow, no modern warning infrastructure, because again, didn't have cell phones. They'd probably
need to do an
air horn or whatever.
The town had just been really built up in the last 20 to 30 years.
Yeah, exactly. And
they were getting around
to
the flood warning systems.
They hadn't gotten around to it.
Just one thing,
They were still probably lighting like gas lamps on the street or whatever.
Well, it hadn't happened yet, so it's like that's something for next year. That's something for next season.
Well, yeah, that's why no plan. It's like that's what people think. It's like, well, it hasn't happened. It'll be fine. You know, we've had those discussions here when I was just visiting, not even living here. And then that rain came down and got up to my knees within minutes. And I was like, Greg, there could be a flash flood here. You're like, it's fine. You're just trying to protect me. But
literally, trying to calm down your wife goes wrong.
Little do you know, I'm a meteorologist. So it's
after that, it's hard to prove you wrong, you know?
Perfect. Thank you very much. But anyways, it was, okay, not that I'm saying you were complacent, but they got complacent. If it didn't happen, we're fine.
Well, see, you got
a little bit of context here.
So Rachel started coming to the ranch in 2019. 2018 was the last year of like a 10-year drought. So the entire time I'd been here and on this property...
Oh, well, you didn't tell me that.
I had never seen a lot of rain. And so I'm judging from history and I'm like, Rachel's crazy. You don't need to be worried. Like, it's not going to happen. And then, of course, I think it was 2021. Yeah, it was the rainiest year we've had in 30 years. And Rachel was here with me and my good friend who used to live on the ranch, Lazy John, had just cut in new roads, right, with the tractor. So he's basically essentially cutting a drainage path for the water coming off of the plateaus we have on our property. And so, of course, Rachel's here when we got a historic rain, like 2 inches in under an hour, and it all flowed off the plateaus onto this freshly cut road, and all of it came right down that road right to where our studio container is.
Yeah, whatever. I handled it perfectly, and you know it.
I think you summoned the rain just to prove me wrong.
Yeah, no, I handled it. I made makeshift gutters. It was fine. I was the hero of that day. But
this is the flood of 1921, not 2021.
Yes. But yes, it comes on quickly. So this is early June 1921. Colorado was already soaked. Weeks of rain, and I'm surprised a flash flood had not happened if there was weeks of it, had saturated the ground across the Front Range and Southern Plains. And then the storms stalled. And by the way, this is how I think from that incident where the rain came in so quickly and then like we started like flooding quickly, I think that's how I got into survival stories and natural disasters, like researching them. I've been wanting to do the Pueblo flood for a while. There's several other ones I want to do, but it's fascinating. It's heartbreaking. I think no one's ever prepared for it because how do you fight Mother Nature? But again,
it's a losing battle.
Yeah. So I've been interested in this for a while. So the storms had stalled at a certain point. Thunderstorms they stopped over southern eastern Colorado, but then it started dumping and dumping again, and the ground could not absorb it. It wasn't just steady rain. It was just buckets, a burst of rain. Like the clouds like opened up like from the heavens and just were like.
Well, one thing that happens here and not other places is that the storms can kind of get stuck against the mountains. They can't go past the mountains.
Really?
So this, they just get storms literally stop and then just sit there and dump
until. In a certain area?
Yeah, right here on the Front Range. It's one of the reasons it happens, the clouds.
So is that why we have those arroyos? They just would get stuck in certain places over time?
Yeah. I mean, like, that's why we get rainfall patterns that can, you know, dump 2, 4, 10 inches.
Well, that's very interesting. So maybe you're the meteorologist, and this is now a weather podcast. But okay, so that makes sense. So yeah, that's probably why like the dry gulches, the arroyos become like rivers, like on our property. And I've seen them. I've seen the Arkansas River, or wait, which one goes through Aguilar, Purgatory or Arkansas?
The Arkansas is in Pueblo.
Pueblo, yeah, yeah. But, okay, we have one.
The Apishapa is
Apishapa,
in.
There you go. Yeah.
Aguilar. The Purgatory is in Trinidad.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. But like I've seen the Apishapa be dry and then all of a sudden be rushing water.
Yeah.
Because you have snow melt off too. Again, this is the weather podcast. So, but yeah, it's the kind that turns dry gulches into rivers in minutes that creates flash floods. And that's exactly what this was. But I think, weatherman Greg Hunter, in order to understand how quickly this happened, we have to go into a little bit of the backstory of that era. So yes, it was a flash flood. And the warning signs were hours before the worst hit. The Arkansas River began rising rapidly on June 3rd. Upstream, tributaries poured into the Arkansas River, and it had become swollen, angry, ready to burst.
And that's the thing about mountain rivers, is that it happens a lot faster than on flat ground. Like, the water is rushing down the mountain, you know, the gravity is pulling it, the water is moving faster than your, you know, Midwestern streams, faster than the Mississippi River. It's flying downhill.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Because, it's coming off, I mean, the Rocky Mountains are some of the highest. So, in the Midwest, Greg grew up in Indiana. Do you not have a lot of flash floods there?
I would say floods are pretty common, but it's like, it's gradual. You mm-hmm. see the river slowly rising.
Okay, this
right?
is like...
And then when it does rise, it slowly comes over, and it's like, oh, it's a creep, right?
Mm-hmm.
When a mountain river finally gets to capacity, it's like, you know... seemingly minutes, like the water just goes, it enters the new waterway, and it's, you know, it's like white water rapids.
Oh, that's it's
you know,
terrifying.
It truly is bursting at the seams, and it happens much faster. On top of the fact that, like, it, you know, not only is it rushing down a mountain, but you mentioned the snow melt, like the water melts more snow, and it all happens.
Yeah.
At once.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. It makes a lot of sense, because so we're dealing with not the lesser of two evils, but like both
double
evil.
The evil.
Yeah, because in Oregon, where I grew up, because we got so much rain, we had, I remember in Cannon Beach, there was an earthquake, I think in Japan, that then created a tsunami that hit Cannon Beach. So, but it slowly flooded. Like, it was like, yeah, it got up, but it was a slow, wasn't really, like, it was like the aftermath of the tsunami that just kind of traveled in and just like slowly flooded.
And also had thousands and hundreds of miles to go.
No, I know, but I'm saying, like, I can picture what you mean by, like, okay, it's a slow flood. It's not like, no one's really panicking. Yeah, maybe their basements or whatever are getting damaged.
Yeah.
But
you kind of know it's coming. It's like, oh, it's the third day of rain.
Yeah.
It's the pond can't hold anymore. It's going to overflow.
Yeah. I think we're thinking the same thing.
In mountain towns, it's like you might have an hour.
Yeah. It's crazy to me. Well, you know what? Let's just get into it. I'll say one sentence and then we'll get into it. But it is crazy to me how tough people had to be to come to the West. I mean, they had to be tough to come anywhere, immigrate over, whatever. But the Wild West and the terrain here is pretty brutal. So I can't imagine being on a wagon train here or in a self-made hut or, you know what I mean. So let's get into the era of 1921, where these people were likely directly related to people that came over on wagon trains. You know, it ain't that far away from 1886 or, you know.
They might be second generation American.
Yeah.
Probably some of them, they were off the boat.
Yeah. Or
the 20s isn't that.
Yeah. And they might be the first ones that were like, hey, we're going to go west. Like,
yeah. A lot of the folks in Colorado, their grandpa came here to mine.
Yeah.
You know, like the Italian miners, 1910, 1914, 1919, a lot of immigrants are coming here because the mines were open and
they could get different types of immigrants. But yes, at least in our area, it seems predominantly Italian, but we'll understand it more.
They're at least the only ones that stayed.
That's a good point. Wow. That's a great point I never thought of. So anyways, to try to understand why the people of Pueblo and this area in general were so vulnerable, you have to understand 1921 America. World War I had just ended. Men came home traumatized, understandably. It was unstable jobs. Inflation was high. And then there was Prohibition, which is why a lot of people came out here, because it's the middle of nowhere. It's a good place to bootleg. You're right over when we've done a podcast kind of about that, but Santa Fe Trail, wonderful.
Yeah. Seemingly every building in Southern Colorado at one time or another had a bootlegging operation going on. It could all be hearsay, but I mean, you can't go into an old brick building in Southern Colorado without them saying, Al Capone used to be here.
Yeah. No, it's
this
trap door
used to have bottles and bottles.
It's 100% true. I've seen enough of the inside. You get the point. So Prohibition is in full swing at this point. And Colorado had officially agreed to outlaw alcohol before the rest of the country. But Southern Colorado, they laughed at it. They were like, we're on the main line here. We can ship in and out. We got the people to do it. So Pueblo, Trinidad, Walsenburg, these towns sat along the key trail and road routes. Italian and Sicilian crime families had influence here. So did organized bootlegging rings tied to Denver and Kansas City. Liquor moved through rail cars, trucks, warehouses near the driver, back rooms of legitimate businesses, which I can picture that based on what I've seen. So Prohibition didn't shut the economy down. It actually pushed it underground. And the Arkansas River Corridor, well, that's where warehouses were cheap. That's where people didn't ask questions. That's where the flood would hit the hardest. And sometimes that is the most heartbreaking, where it hits the people that can afford it the least, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's how it always goes, you know.
Yeah.
The high ground, probably owned by the rich guy.
Yeah.
Cheap warehouse space, probably right along the river.
Yeah.
I mean, it was exactly that way in Asheville.
Asheville, yeah.
Rachel and I had the sorrowful opportunity to be in Asheville right after their historic flood just last year. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, it's like all these old towns, the arts district kind of grows out of the old meatpacking plants, the old, like, where's the cheap warehouses?
Mm-hmm.
Only art, you know, like, nobody wants to live there. Some starving artists, perfect for starving artists.
Well, yeah, it's like they don't outfit it to be comfortable or weatherproof, because they're just like, fuck it. But they're also kind of fucking themselves if they're like big business owners.
Well, it's everywhere, like Los Angeles. Where's the Arts District now? It's off of 6th Street. And what an old meatpacking plant.
What's like, near the LA
Realtors
River?
Realize, like, hey, wait a minute. Artists like abandoned brick buildings full of graffiti. Here you go. We're going to do absolutely nothing. And you're going to pay us for this? Okay, you got it. The windows aren't insulated. Half of them are broken. Here you go. Here's your monthly lease.
Yeah, that's true. It's 100% true. What's located next to the LA River? That one constantly floods. Like, what housing stuff? I can't remember exactly what's located next to it.
It's the Arts District now.
Oh, okay. So same thing.
Quite literally, like, Willow Studios, where I used to have a studio, yeah, and that giant old meatpacking right plant that's an abandoned brick building. Yes, it's right there. You know, it's just...
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. Huh.
Nothing's changed from 1921 to now.
Nope, it never does. The poor guys get poorer and the rich guys get richer.
But we're not a political podcast. Let's move on.
Just wipe it clean with a big flood.
Don't miss Scarpetta, a propulsive new crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis, Emmy winner Bobby Cannavale, with Emmy nominee Simon Baker and Academy Award winner Ariana DeBose. Scarpetta follows Dr. Kay Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman, a brilliant and no-nonsense chief medical examiner, as she investigates a haunting murder that strangely parallels her first major case from decades earlier. Is the case that made her the case that breaks her? Based on the best-selling crime novels by Patricia Cornwell, Scarpetta is both a crime thriller and messy family drama that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Get ready to hunt a serial killer in the satisfying series with terrifying twists and an ending you won't see coming. Watch all episodes of Scarpetta now, only on Prime Video.
So because people didn't ask questions for however long they had settled there and figured it out, it was like impending doom. It was like, everything's fine. Until it wasn't. So by the evening of June 3rd, the river was out of control. Just after midnight, the Arkansas River exploded out of its banks. Also terrifying, it was like at night. The floodwaters tore through Pueblo with a terrifying speed, rushing through the town. So not just like the little thing we were talking about. This was a wall of water filled with debris, lumber, railroad cars. Can you imagine a railroad car going towards you?
I mean, I can't imagine it coming towards me, but due to the internet and like the Asheville flood, that really opened my eyes. Yeah, I saw a shipping container floating through, and it just...
Well, we didn't see it floating. We saw like the aftermath.
No, I'm talking about a video that I saw.
Oh, but we saw one in... It was dried up at that point. There was... a shipping container, there was a like delivery truck. They were all like
smashed together.
Semi truck, yeah.
Power poles that had just been pushed through the metal.
Yeah, just unbelievable.
Just gnarled up like you wouldn't believe. But no, I saw a video of when the Asheville flood was happening of a shipping container just like flying through the waterway and then like wrapping around. Ugh. Yeah, I mean, the power of water is just really, like, undeniable.
Okay, I would like you guys to write into 7deadlysinnerspodcast@gmail.com. I haven't done these in a while with any listener stories or fears of natural disasters, survival stories. I would love to do an episode about that, and I promise I will pay attention to the email and compile them, because I'm fascinated by what terrifies people most, because I'm about ready to ask Greg. For me, it is water. Like videos of tsunamis, like literally like make my heart like race. Flood stuff, it's terrifying to me. Terrifying. Tornado, I've never seen one, and it's a weird thing to say. I'd like to see one from afar, but not injure people, but I just am interested in seeing what it looks like.
I've been in a tornado.
I know you
have. A couple.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. What is your biggest, mine's water, so tsunamis and floods. What is yours?
Sharknado. I'm just kidding.
Oh, it was a shark is scary, too.
It's a ridiculous, stupid
movie. That also involves water, so that's scary.
No, I'd say without a doubt now it is floodwaters, but okay, it wouldn't have been a few years ago. I would have probably said an earthquake.
I was never afraid of those in LA.
I know.
I felt them a bunch of times.
We're talking like a massive earthquake.
The
little ones that shake your face a little bit don't count, where the building's actually coming down. But even still, it's like there are ways to find safety. Right, you're chasing safety in these natural disasters, like a fire, like you can get out. There is hope. An earthquake, you can find somewhere that is safe. You can escape. And the building might come down and land, you know, in an open pocket and you're still alive. Like, but floodwaters, there's no, you can't outrun it. You can't swim through it. There's debris in it. There's disease in it. There is no safety to find. Like, if you're not already at the high ground when it comes, like, it's kind of good riddance. And I think the enormous power of rushing water, I have realized just how terrifying it is through the natural disasters we've been witnessing over the last couple of years and the research that you've kind of forced me into and seen. Like, I have seen some videos, I've seen some things where the most destructive power is unstoppable water. And I'd rather take on a tornado, a hurricane, an earthquake, or a fire than a flash flood of great magnitude.
I would like to say thank you very much for validating my fear, because that is, maybe a little high five or handshake. That's how I feel about it, where I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I've never been around a tornado, and you can't outrun those necessarily, but like, it's not the power of just like, holy shit, it's rushing towards you. It's like an earthquake, terrifying, and it's destroyed so many, you know, like there's been horrible earthquakes. Also, volcanic eruptions, but that like water, you can't avoid really.
Well, unless you have warning. A volcanic eruption could be up there. I mean,
yeah. But those don't happen that often.
What do they call it? The flow, it's like something.
Volcanic flow?
No. It's like, starts with a C. It's like climastic. Yeah. I don't know. But like, that's equally as terrifying. Like a Mount St. Helens eruption. Like,
that's not, if you're in the blast zone. That wasn't that terrifying unless you went there.
It's
the famous guy that went there,
thinking about, whose name was also like Truman?
I don't know. But regardless, he chose to stand his ground. My parents were in the...
Yeah, for whatever. Sure, for sure.
Doesn't matter. But thank you for validating my fear of like the rushing of water. Because again, yes, an earthquake, and it has destroyed. I'm not trying to disrespect people where they've lost so much. But just that feels to me like you can find shelter. But if hundreds of thousands of tons of water come rushing at you, picking up buildings, picking up lumber, picking up, you know, storage containers, picking up semis.
It just destroys everything in its path. Just like, if it wants to.
I don't know what you do. I don't know. Yeah. Anyways.
The murky, dangerous waters of a flash flood is something you just don't want to be in.
And, well, not that we've been in it, but...
No, I know, understand, and I don't want to.
Yeah.
Saying I'd rather take on maybe even volcanic flow, lava flow. That seems like it'd move slower.
The water is rushing in. Bridges are collapsing. Streetcars ripped from their tracks. Whole blocks of the city vanishing. In the aftermath, the official death toll ranges from 100 to over 150 people. But here's the truth. No one really knows. Because in these types of accidents that are Mother Nature torturing us, you don't really know, because bodies were swept downstream. Some were never recovered, which is just heartbreaking.
Yeah, that death toll seems way low. I thought it was going to be in the thousands for the damage that was done.
Yeah, but sometimes you can't really track people down based on their level of injury or the fact that they may have been undocumented workers and they couldn't contact their family. Some were transient laborers. Some were people whose families didn't have the power to demand answers. There were entire families that were found drowned in their homes. People were trapped in basements. Others climbed to rooftops and waited, sometimes for hours, hoping for rescue boats that could possibly reach them. And often, sometimes they didn't. Or more often, they didn't. But here's how we go back to the sort of culture of this area that we've covered before. Yes, there were people with the underworld ties that were among the dead. Warehouse rumors to store bootleg liquor were destroyed. There are documented cases of unidentified men pulled from wreckage, men no one claimed. Rumors circulated for decades that certain bootlegging figures disappeared, quote unquote, in the flood. There were no funerals, no records, no investigations. Water is very good at erasing inconvenient people. Not that I think that Mother Nature did this. Or maybe, oh shit, now I have to throw that at you. That just popped into my mind. Could the levees have not been handled properly because they wanted to destroy the lowlands?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think...
That's just me being...
There's a lot of documented cases of flooding out towns on purpose. Mm-hmm. And there is one up in Pueblo, I'm pretty sure.
That's a real thing that they did on purpose?
Yeah, there are cities at the bottom of many lakes in the United States.
Well, the government building over them, which I think is a terrifying concept.
So I'm saying it does happen. Water can wash away a lot. But in this particular circumstance, with the entire city of Pueblo, they didn't want to destroy themselves that much. That'd be shooting yourself in the foot too much. That's just my personal opinion, but maybe not. Maybe you're onto something there.
I don't know.
It certainly has happened in history before.
But the aftermath was improvisational at best. The rescue efforts were chaotic. Boats were improvised. People used ropes, ladders, anything they could find, which I also kind of find like to be a beautiful thing in, you know, when disasters happen, when people come together and they'll do anything to help someone. Granted, you don't want to have to be in that circumstance, but it is beautiful when human nature comes together and, you know, does stuff like that. I don't know.
Nature is a great equalizer. Everybody's the same swimming for shore.
Yeah, there you go. But also a part of the aftermath is disease followed the flood, which you kind of mentioned. Typhoid and dysentery became real threats. And there's another famous story that I want to cover. This is the biggest flood in American history. I'm not going to say the name, but I guess you can Google it. Fine. It's Johnstown. People helped each other. And that is the incredible and terrifying story of the 1921 Pueblo Flash Flood. I plan to keep doing some of these. Like, I won't do them back to back, but I want to cover the worst flood in American history, which stay tuned for. Anyways, thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. I appreciate you. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thank you. Until next week. Bye.